Hackman, led by the CEO, Mr. Shen. And there's also communications at the back. I think this is the PMG. Am I correct?
Thank you.
Yes. You are welcome, and the staff in this meeting. We are going to start irrespective, unless you have crossed the floor. We can stand. we are going to start our meeting. The other members will find us on our way. We have an apology from the whip. He's still in the strategy meeting, of which I was supposed to be there myself. So let's hope there are some of them are on their way. The presentations that we are expecting today is the last quarter report, expenditure report, as well as the just a briefing on the USDG. I think last year, this year, the department requested that they will come back again to unpack the USDG grant. But at the same time, we are aware that this grant, although it's administered by the national department, but it's going to be implemented by the metros as well as the selected municipalities. We were expecting them to come to the before the committee next week to present their strategies, their plans, but the minister has requested the portfolio committee to reschedule that session because there are still issues that need to be finalized between the department and those municipalities, of which that request has been accepted by Parliament because we forwarded it to Parliament, it has accepted. So we've moved towards the end of the month, last week of June, because we are going to go for recess in July, so there won't be any other time to look at those issues. So I also wish to thank the department because we normally complain about the documents that come late. At least where you have done well, we need to commend you so that you must understand when we are whipping you, it's not that we don't love you or we don't need you, but it's because that you are not doing well on that particular time. So you have done pretty well this time. We received the documents very, very early, and we hope that you will continue the trend that we have undertaken, but we must say that at some stage we'll understand where there are issues that are beyond your power, but that does not give you the leeway not to respond. With those few words, you are welcome. So I'm going to hand it over to you, CEO. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Members of the committee. On the first presentation regarding the fourth quarter financial performance of the department, Chair, I have with me, let me just introduce for the committee and your information, Mr. Anton Arendse, the Chief Director of Human Settlements Planning, will assist in the presentation on the Urban Settlements Development Grant. With me also to my left is Mr. Nyameko Mbengo, who is the Acting Chief Financial Officer. And then also with us is Mr. Mario Sichi, who is the Director responsible for grant management on the presentation, the first presentation on the financial performance for the department. And on the first presentation, Chairperson, Mr. Mbengu will take us through that. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. The presentation chair gives a report not only on the fourth quarter, but it also goes to giving you a complete picture of the whole year, the expenditure and the outcomes, why problems is right at the end. And the first slide gives first a comparative from the previous financial year, 2009-2010, with a total allocation of 14 billion. And then it also gives the voted allocation of 16.2, the adjustments, and the final adjusted allocation of 16.29. And that's the total available to be spent during the financial year. The next slide check gives the year under review, 2010-2011, and it also gives a picture of the MTF allocation over 3 years. You will notice that the revised allocation of the department is 19.3, and when you compare it to the MTF allocation, it goes up to 26 billion in the outer year of the MTF period. Looking at 2010-2011, the budget is shown as being allocated to various programs of the department, administration getting 211, housing policy, research and monitoring 47, housing planning and delivery support to 25, and the housing development finance, that 18 billion has in it those various allocations, the human settlement development grant, the urban settlement development grant, the housing disaster relief grant, the departmental agencies, the rural household infrastructure grant. Next slide. That picture gives just the same information, but in a completely different graph form. You will notice that grants in total constitute almost 94% of the department's budget, with 4% constituting the administration costs of the national department, and the 2.3 being constituted by transfer payments and rural household infrastructure grant. The next slide, Chair, gives the expenditure as of 31st March 2011. Looking at the adjusted allocation and indicating per program what was the expenditure, you will notice in administration, for an example, program 1 spent 188 million compared to the adjusted allocation of 251, and it gives also in the last column the percentage spending by various programs, with program 1 standing at 85% and program 5 standing at 60%, but on the overall the department is sitting at 99% of the total allocation. The next slide takes the same information but in a different form. Maybe we can pass that. The next slide here is the expenditure by economic classification. It's the same expenditure but classified in economic by economic classification, and you will notice that in respect of compensation for employees, we are standing at 90%, goods and services 73%, interest paid on financial leases is 23%, payments for financial assets 96%, transfer and subsidies, we transferred almost everything, and payments for capital assets, we are standing at 59%. coming to the fourth quarter, Chair, our projections are where that we will spend 3.7 billion. But we ended up with 4 billion, with a variance of 240 million. You will notice that in terms of the variance, in the fourth quarter, most of the programs we spent less, taking, for example, administration, the projections were 62, we spent 60. Program 2, projections were 11, we spent 10. And program 3, projections were 59, and it was 53. And when you go down to the last two programs, the variance is negative. But the total variance for the department is 240 million. Next slide, please. That is the same information, but given an economic classification, it also indicates to you where the variances go. You will notice that in goods and services, the variance is negative. The projections were 89, but we spent 92. When you go to the last items, transfer and subsidies, and payments for capital transfers, also the variance is negative. Next slide, please. This gives a picture of information from the provinces with regard to the Human Settlement Development Grant, as well as the Housing Disaster Relief Grant. And the slide was too wide, Chair, so we've cut it into two. The first column gives the voted allocation at 15 billion, and then the second column gives the adjustments from provincial allocations. Those adjustments, Chair, are rollovers from various provincial treasuries, as well as additional allocations by various provinces to top up the grant. And the next column constitutes adjustment by the national department. What is in there, Chair, are three things mainly. One, it's a 15 billion which was reallocated from the national budget to Gauteng, because of an emergency which was there and they didn't have money. And the next thing which is in the Chair is the stopping and reallocation of funds between provinces. And lastly is the movement of 100 million from Northwest to Gauteng because of the changes in the borders with regard to Gauteng. Those are the adjustments which are in that column. The next column talks about the total adjusted allocation, which is at 15 billion, and the total available to the provinces, which includes the allocation and the various adjustments from provinces. The total available is 15,249,438 million. That's what the provinces had to spend. Now, when you take the total available on the first column and then you compare it to transfers, expenditure by the provinces, and it gives you the information compared to each other. The first column is what was available. The next column is transfers to provinces as per the total adjusted. And the third column is what was spent by the provinces. And the next column is what was left unspent, which indicates that in total, provinces had 441 million unspent at the end of the financial year. And the total expenditure against what was available is 97% and by the provinces. I'm on slide number 11, Chair. that's the same information but indicated in a different form in grant. Can we just, next slide please. The fourth quarter on slide 15 is human settlement development grant for the fourth quarter from January 2011 to March 31st, 2011. That slide check just gives the fourth quarter, what happened during the fourth quarter. It starts with the total available, or the total which was transferred to the provinces, and then it gives what was transferred during that quarter, which is 3.5 billion in total, and then it gives what was spent by the provinces during that quarter. And it then gives percentage spent of the total available. And the last column is spent expenditure as a percentage of what was transferred. You will notice that there are provinces where expenditure in the last quarter far exceeded what was transferred to them. For example, Free State, they spent 312% of what was transferred, and Gauteng 101%, and KwaZulu-Natal 190%. But in total, provinces spent 131% in the fourth quarter of what was transferred to them. That change is a preliminary figure of what was the actual service delivery during the year from April 2010 to 31st March 2011. In total, provinces reported that they delivered 63,546 service sites, and the number of houses completed was 121,879, and the total delivery is 185,425. I must say, Chair, that these figures are all preliminary figures at year end. Because currently everyone is busy verifying and ensuring, drafting their annual reports and preparing for the audit. I think after the audit has been finalized, then we will have, we'll be sure exactly what are the very final figures. But so far, this is what we have received from the provinces. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mbembo. Is there anything you would like to say, CEO?
Just on the one point, I think just on the issue related to the fourth quarter expenditure performance on page 13, where you've got the funds transfers 3.5 and the spent by province. I mean, that difference there is reflected by the fact that in previous quarters we would have transferred money and there would have been underspending. So what normally happens is sometimes the provinces play catch up, so it's not like they're overspent, but it's money that they would have had already transferred to them. Just to add on that, so it's not an over expenditure, but it's, you know, in previous quarters you would have had money that was transferred but not spent because of a whole range of technical reasons, and there's a catch up that occurs. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Member. Mr. Singh. Honorable Dabute. Honorable Bowman.
Thank you. Excuse me, thank you, Chairperson. One of the disadvantages we have by meeting with the department so often is
Sorry, there's a lady who's joined us. May you just introduce yourself. Salga. Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chair. As I was saying, one of the disadvantages in meeting so often with the department is that they start preempting our questions, which is, I think, what the CEO just said. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 questions, if I may. I perfectly understand the comments made towards the end about warning us against the that it's not actually an over expenditure. The chairperson has once again just reinforces the concern that we have, that towards the end of the financial year, there seems to be this high expenditure to get rid of the money. That proves what we've been saying again and again and again. Now, related to that, and we may have asked this question before, and the department may have said that they don't really have control, they need to transfer the funds. I think we have asked previously that funds be transferred to provinces in relation to their expenditure. So it would appear that they were given X amounts of money, irrespective of what they spent throughout the rest of the year. So, and therefore they were sitting with excess funds. And if it is a treasury regulation, then perhaps it's something we need to take up with treasury, but it encourages, to my mind, towards the end of the year, inefficient spending. Then, excuse me, Chairperson, what I would have liked to have seen here is, I know we've gotten breakdowns and expenditure for the last quarter, but if we go back to slide 3, and I'm particularly interested in the urban settlement development grant, and I know we're going to talk about it later, but it's an amount that was, you know, it was late in the year, very few municipalities and provinces know exactly what it means, how they're supposed to use it, but they had 5.2 billion. And we've got no, throughout this presentation, we didn't get a sense of, on slide number 3, Chairperson. Yeah. We didn't get a sense of how much of that was expended. We continuously get a total for the development grant. But here we have the breakdown now of what makes up the 8 billion. I don't have any idea of that particular amount, how much was spent by provinces, because that is a very specific grant for very specific use. Then what I'd also like the department to perhaps do in with this type of financial presentation, because of the huge amount, I mean, our development grant is, I don't know, 97-98% of the budget. It gives us a skewed picture, because if you look at slide number 5, Chairperson, with the exception of Program 4, all the others is actually quite a large underspending. Now, it may be from a small base, but when we then are then told that 99% of the budget has been spent, it's a skewed picture because of this imbalance between this huge amount in Program 4 and the others. And I think we should be looking at 1, 2, 3, and 5 separately. And then we'll actually see a very different picture, which may alert us and the department to problems within the department because of that under expenditure there. Then something that I'd like a little bit more information on is the payment for capital assets, which was only 59% was spent. So exactly what is that? Because again, it's of some concern. It refers to capital, which to me is always something that needs to be expanded. And if we've only spent 59%, then I'd like to know what exactly those are. Two more questions, Chairperson. I'm just wondering on slide 8, the Program 5, Strategic Relations and Governance, why this sudden increase in the last quarter? What has been the cause of that? And then, if I may, Chair, like I said, my last question, I'm looking at slides 9 and 10 together, and I'm concentrating on the transfers and the subsidies. In slide 9, the total allocation is 15.5 billion. In slide 10, the total available and even the total adjusted allocation is 15.17 billion. Why do we have this difference? Should somewhere should that not be the same amount? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. The disadvantage of certain things is that it took everything. I'll just go to this one question that it didn't touch. Chairperson, on this on your slide on the delivery performance. For example, in KZN, we were shown slides by NHDRC where houses had to be rectified, newly built houses. So this delivery on KZN, does it include those houses which were to be rectified or not? If so, because I'm told by my reliable source that one of the companies that built houses which are to be rectified had this big party in KZN. So how is the department going to recover those funds from that guy? He celebrated his shoddy work, so we cannot leave him alone. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I think it is in relation to the projects that are 6 months built, if they are being calculated as deliveries. Okay. Honorable comments?
I'm just going to add on to what has already been said, and perhaps I could start with that very one there. Delivery of houses and sites completed. I'm not too sure what I'm comparing this with. So this slide for me is a bit meaningless. There's no, you know, what is our target? And then obviously the service sites and the houses completed, that gives a total of 185 million, I would imagine. 185,000, yes. Deliveries, if you like. But I think we need some explanation on that. We need something to compare with, you know, it's a useless thing. And then I just want to ask, on slide number 5, and maybe I'm a little bit stupid here, but I want to ask, why do we adjust an allocation when we can't spend it? You know, and I see we've got, for example, we under administration, we go to 221 million. The adjusted amount, but we only spend, so we've got a variance there. Why do we adjust the amount and then we can't spend it? So that is my question on that. And I think that I think the other questions have been answered, have been asked. Thank you. I was also pre-interested on the one about the extra, you know, overspending, but obviously that has been. But I want to agree that, you know, there must surely be a way that we get a more accurate account of that, because, you know, we just get confronted with that excess over expenditure, and then it just doesn't make sense. It's all really well to sit here and then go back, but, you know, if the media pick up on this, I mean, how do they pick up on it if they don't know all the history? So I think it would be better for us to understand that.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think whilst we're on the delivery performance, I'm trying to make up my mind here, because just to make an example of KZN, it's unfortunate that I'm going to make examples about KZN. Because we have been there. The municipality, the metro, claimed that they produce 25,000 units per year annually. That's what they told us. Now, here we receive a report of saying the province have delivered 25,000 units. Now my question is, because the municipality stated clearly that even the province, when they were making their presentations, they also presented their own statistics, their deliverables. So in my mind now, I think from KZN we should expect more of the 25,000 units that has been delivered. So I don't think we can be proud to say KZN is delivered if we can consider the information that has been presented before the portfolio committee. But nonetheless, if you are looking at this picture, the whole picture, it means we are still less than what we are supposed to be delivering in order to reach what the president has said. In fact, we agree that we are not going to look at what the president has said. Let's not take an advantage of the president, because we set ourselves goals before the president announced. But what is important, we should not deliver less. We should not deliver less from what the president has declared. So I think that was our agreement. So it means we are still far less to more especially the challenge here is to ensure that we meet the MDG goal of slum clearance. So the pace that we are moving, it does not necessarily give us hope. But I'm still having a challenge on Free State. It's unfortunate about Free State. I think you need to tell us what is happening in Free State about that 133 million they spent within Gekosenge College, Ilimba. You remember, Ifri State, they withdrew 17,000 units. And the indication was that there was no money. Now, apparently, at the end of the year, there is money that they could not spend. And once the minister announces that he is going to relocate funds from Free State to another province that is spending, the money disappears. Then we find here Lahaik, yes, that's a spike in funding and expenditure. So I think we need answers on that one. By spending, but the material, material, where is that material? Where is it kept? Kept for whom? Is there any security? The finance person. No, I'm just referring to you, otherwise don't respond. So, yeah, I'll give the department to respond.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the Urban Settlement Development Grant, Chair, we need to remember that this grant will be implemented for the first time in this current financial year. This figure under 2010-2011 is an allocation which was sitting with COCTA as a different grant, as mixed cities. But the figure is being put in for comparative purposes. It's just an indicative
a figure, but it was not with the department. It was with another department, Copter, and that's where it was spent. So we don't have expenditure for that because it is in another department. But we are putting it in so that we can just compare.
Can I just understand, if you say that was with Copter and the spending happened through that department, do we know that spending actually did happen? And I think the question was, this is a ring-fenced amount. I mean, it's a conditional amount. So was it in fact, and I think that's what we're asking, so whether it was Copter or not, did we investigate that in fact was the case?
Honourable Longman, I think the conditionalities that have been established for USDG are in fact quite different to those that were set for the now disestablished mixed cities grant. So, put differently, It may provide a skewed picture if we now compare. We would not be comparing apples with apples here. Secondly, and we will in fact cover some of I think the points that, or the concerns that you're driving at around how that mixed cities grant is being used by the cities. It's something which we in fact will cover in the presentation, but. I'm sure as you would know, our department in fact had no control over the mixed cities grant. That was something which was managed and administered by COCTA and National Treasury. It's really only once at the point where the USDG was approved by Cabinet, and that coincided with mixed cities, where we assumed responsibility for the USDG.
I think to sort of capture what Member Bowman's indicating, that 5.157 is an amount that was DORA during the 2010-2011 period. So if one goes back to the DORA, one will find that amount. I think to answer your question, what we can do is that in a subsequent, once we've completed the audit, we will get the report of what happened in the mixed city. So that 5.157, Member Bowman, that will be accounted for in by COCTA, and obviously we will get that report. So if you want, through you, Chair, we'll give an indication of exactly what happened to that money. But that was the amount that was DORA for 2010-11. It's used as an indicative figure in relation to, because it speaks about the MTF allocation. So it's just to measure what the change is and what the differential is. But yes, that money was there. It was transferred to the cities or the six metros as it then was during 2010-11.
On slide 5, Chair, I do agree with Mr. Steen that there is an expenditure in various programs of the department. There are various reasons for that an expenditure. I do also agree that if you take out grants and transfer payments from program 4, the bottom percentage obviously will be different. I do agree with that. However, there are various reasons for an expenditure in various programs. I'll just give a few examples, reasons. The first one, of course, is the fact that you've got vacant positions. When you go to other slides, you may have noticed that under compensation, next slide, no, not that, yes, you may have noticed that we are standing at 90% in compensation because of vacant positions. Goods and services, 73%. You will notice that, for an example, interest paid, financial leases, we spent only 23%, and that was mainly because of the overestimated photocopier machines, and we overestimated the interest we will pay there, and others, Chair. I do agree there is under expenditure, but I must also say, Chair, that one of the reasons for under expenditure in the department is this concerted effort, it's not wrong, of saving in the department, right from the minister, that there is a lot of concerted effort that we need to save, we need to do things economically, we need to try and find ways of saving money in the department, and one of the reasons is that because of that you end up spending less. Not that nothing has been done, but because we have saved money. Of course, there are areas where there was a plan, there were activities which were planned for, but they were not done, and as a result, you end up not spending money. In other areas, there are delays. I will give an example here of a situation which we face in the department this year, where CETA terminated our agreement with them because they were undergoing, I would call it a re-engineering exercise. They decided that they must terminate the agreement with us, and we had to go on tender for a period. And even that process did not yield good results when we came to the end of it. And we ultimately ended up having to go back to CETA to have a stop measure or a temporary measure with them. And because of that, we didn't spend on computer services a lot of money. And we underspent on computer services as a result of that. So those are various reasons why we are reflecting on expenditure. I must also indicate, Chair, that from the other angle, the under expenditure assisted in the sense that you had savings which you could use to address areas which you never planned for or budgeted for. And we are in the process of closing down CEFCON. And CEFCON and Tulelisha. CEFCON had a debt with SARS, a tax debt with SARS. We couldn't close them down because of that debt. That debt had to be settled, and because we approached Treasury to request assistance to that in respect of that. Treasury could not, their response was not positive. They couldn't give us money to assist us to settle off SARS. And as a result, we had to find savings in the department, because the only alternative which was left was for them to sell off parcels of land they have, which we need for human settlement development. So we had to take a decision and say, no, instead of selling parcels of land, let's use get savings from within the budget of the department to assist in settling off the CEFCON debt. And one of the reasons why there is also under expenditure is the fact that we sent two requests to Treasury to try and get approval to reallocate money from the savings towards that project. And the first one, they responded to it earlier, before the end of the financial year. But the second request, they responded to it in April, after the year end. So we couldn't transfer that money. And as a result, it reflects as under expenditure. So those are the reasons, Chair, why we are reflecting under expenditure. Why adjusting when you will not be able to spend? the adjustment chair take place because people have got plans and they need funding. So you have to find money. You have to find money from the savings to assist them. But sometimes it does happen that what people plan to do does materialize and they don't achieve for various reasons what they planned to do. And as a result, then you end up not spending. Or for example, the example I've just given, sometimes it does happen that for various reasons plans don't materialize. But the adjustment happens earlier, before people start implementing their plans. Yes.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, just in relation to, I mean, the end of the year expenditure spikes, I mean, the golf stick phenomenon as it's commonly referred to. I think what we've done as a department, and that was one of the reasons why, for example, we had that situation where the Free State and KZN, we have reallocated, because the DG and the Minister have requested that we monitor and manage these spikes. So one of the things that the department's doing, which it didn't do in the past, was to carefully monitor and manage that expenditure and see what the provinces are. So if there's unusual spikes, and that's how one picked up, for example, the Free State occurrence. So those are issues that we are having to deal with. The second issue in relation to that is that on the basis of what's contained in DORA, the department is obliged to, on a monthly basis, transfer money because we're not allowed to withhold. If you withhold, there's a process that one has to take. And that is something that we've said, we've got to look into, and we've discussed that with Treasury, because if the DG withholds money, it becomes a whole compliance and sanction issue against him, even where he's of the impression or we advise him or the minister. So that's an issue that we've indicated this year we want to be able to sort of activate some of those measures where we hold, and I think the point is that and you've been urging, how do we make provinces and municipalities more accountable for the quality of spend and what they're doing? So that's the one issue that we've had.
Neville, I want you to stress out. I want to put an emphasis on this issue, because to us it is very much important. If the Treasury rules allow that you withhold, because I think they do, why are you feeling cold of not doing that is right? Why? Because I think it's time. Seemingly, the National Department is so lenient. The National Department is so lenient. And then you cry baby at the end of the day to say, no, because of this, because of this. Because to me, you are protected at some stage, but you don't utilize those opportunities that are there for you. You never sizzle too much, but it is unfortunate because you are lenient at the expense of the poor. That's the problem we are facing. So if you can try and activate, as you are saying, those measures, because as long as you are protected, you do things the right way. Because if there are processes you have to follow them. So that even the citizens of this country, but the confidence to the government work. But if Nina's officials, but at the end of the day, that is why abandon. Babbling at the back tele government. It's just because I'm not, you know, I'm an official of NACLECA. So I would urge, I would really, you must make sure, even if it means to come to us, to do something, to assist you, so that there is an enforcement. Bring something to us. You know, we are always ready. This committee, as Lali, you know, we don't sleep. You can give us today, and then you ask us and say, honorable members, we need this tool to assist us in ensuring that the citizens of this country do benefit whatever they deserve. But in like, please. But I want you to put an emphasis on this so that we understand it clearly. What are the challenges? What is the measure that is the process that you can undertake if there is a challenge?
Just in relation to that, I think in relation to that, the turnaround strategy that we've spoken about, which is in its final stages of being implemented, one of the strengthening issues is the monitoring, evaluation, and oversight. Because yes, we understand that has been predominantly a weakness in all our systems, and it's an issue that's been addressed in that. So the monitoring and evaluation and oversight have been strengthened. There's the issue related to the grant management that will be more activist in its approach, and yes, of course, I'm sure that it's going to create certain tensions and conflicts, but we think that's good for the system because it does. The strategic relations spark chair, I mean, there was an expenditure that covered our turnaround. There was because we'd initiated the turnaround and we needed to find money, that amount constituted there together with some of the money for Surfcon, so that was the strategic relations. The challenge in relation to Member Bowman's point around the question of the delivery performance, and we'll bring the figures so that a comparative analysis. I think for us the one concern is that if you look at the total of 185, 425, if you measure that in relation to last year, the total I think was 223 odd. So that for us is a big worry. The fact that there's a dropping of delivery in terms of numbers, and we know that we cannot afford that. So the point is, how do we appropriately respond to this? And I think as the national department, there's the delivery agreement. There's the issues about how do we sort of, in relation to policy, change those issues, because it's an issue that I think collectively we're going to have to look at, because the whole issue of do we continue in the current trajectory, houses versus sites, and the entire sort of focus of how do we do that. So that's an issue that for us is an issue that we said we're going to go back, look at it, and together with the provinces, how do we sort of resolve that issue. In relation to the Itekwini...
to do a follow-up on that. You've raised a very important thing here, because if we've got that comparative figure, and the department then, surely this has been happening over, we're now in the fourth quarter. So it's been happening that there's been a drop-off, at least there must have been some sort of a drop-off. And then what was your response to that, rather than today saying that is a worrying factor, you know, that we're dropping off in relation to our targets that we should be achieving. What was the response of the department early on when it starts to happen?
Chair, the one issue that does come up is the cost of construction and the inflation, construction inflation in relation to that. So that's a figure that because the subsidy has not increased for the last, I think, 2 or 3 years, so that hasn't increase hasn't occurred. But what I can indicate is that once we've got the audited figures, we'll come back to you and say these are some of the reasons. Our response to that has been the fact that we've got to deliver more with less. So how do we improve that? Because I think financially the issue is it's not about making more money available. It's how do we use the existing money better the one figure that we're still waiting for is the sites completed in the Free State. So we'll come back to you with a more accurate figure in relation to what that delivery is, and we can present that together with you over what the steps are. The steps that we've taken in relation to that is particularly around the delivery agreement. What is the provinces doing to change their behavior? And that for us is an issue. So one of the responses of that has been the Urban Settlements Development Grant. So, but what I was going to come back to another point. In your deliberations with the Tekwini, they probably told you that they deliver 25,000. Now the reason that happens, Chair, is that you've got metros, and particularly those metros are Ekurhuleni, City of Joburg, Itekwini too, and Tshwane in the main, utilize some of their own funding to supplement the grant. That figure is not reported because it's still only once a claim has been submitted, approved, logged on to the HSS, does that figure filter into the... So if you go to the metros or if you go to some of the municipalities in that case, you'll find that there's delivery that has occurred, there's a site that's been serviced, or there's a house that's been constructed, signed off, or already allocated, but that has not yet plugged itself into the system because it's a Tekwini money. And only once a Tekwini gets paid does that come into the system. So you'll find that's what happens. I'm not punting one municipality, but a Tekwini is, at last count, just in relation to supplementing the delivery figures, they put in almost what 600 or 700 million rand of their own money. I know, for example, a city like Joburg puts in something like 200 million. Ekurhuleni ranges between 150 and 200. Cape Town's got those figures. So those figures don't figure. What will happen, Chair, is that with the activation of the Urban Settlements Development Grant, those figures will start coming into the picture. So we'll get a composite figure around the Human Settlements Development Grant, the Urban Settlements Development Grant, and what the metros in the main are putting. Because I think the one issue that we've been indicating, it's not about the Human Settlements Development Grant. It's not about national money only. It's about what is the provinces putting into it and what is the municipalities putting into it. Because the point is, we're going to reach a point where if we want to be able to crack the housing and settlements backlog, then it's not, international can't be the only funder. So that's why the Urban Settlements Development Grant, and when Anton presents that, you'll see how we're trying to plug in and make sure and create incentives for both the provinces and the municipalities to put in money.
Just to follow up on this whole issue, which is becoming a bit more confusing, Chair. But I must just, I think, with respect to the CEO, indicate that, to my knowledge, the subsidy has increased every year. And this committee actually initiated that when Minister Sisulu was still the minister, after a long period when there was no increase. Since then, it has increased every year. But be that as it may, Chairperson, I am concerned about what was just said, because while some provinces may then hold back the units that they built with their own money and then only put them into the pool, so to speak, the following financial year when they do get repaid, it is going to give a completely distorted picture of delivery. And I was under the impression if a province or a municipality puts in some of their own funds, they don't necessarily claim that back in the next financial year. Because then ultimately what you're saying is they're just doing bridging finance. But my main question here was the last question you raised about particularly the Free State and some other provinces. And I raised this concern when the provinces came to us and gave us an indication of their targets for the following year. Now, if we look at that slide there, and if you look at the money spent by the provinces, and you take the Free State, for example, and you take Mpumalanga, who both had just over 1 billion. Now, I understand that in different provinces there may be different costs, but ultimately the grant is a fixed grant for one house. And if a municipality chooses to add to it, they can. How do we justify that when they more or less spend the same amount of money, and it's on slide 10, it's 1,037,000 for Free State and 1,011,000 or million for Mpumalanga. But Mpumalanga almost delivered twice the number of units, and I'm not even looking at service sites. Now, how can that be possible? Because there has to be some sort of a correlation. I don't expect them to deliver exactly, because there's differences, but it's got to be within some sort of reason. Now, this must ring alarm bells that something somewhere is not wrong. It's not been captured right, it's not been reported right. There's houses maybe that's not on the ground that's being reported. It must ring alarm bells, Chairperson.
Yes, this is the trend of my thinking as well. And in addition to that, I think what you're suggesting is that what the municipalities put in is a totally new unit that goes in. My understanding, and certainly in Itikweni, it's not a totally new unit. They improve the quality of the infrastructure. For example, instead of doing a graded road when they're doing a new settlement, they're doing a tarred road. They pay for that. Now, does that necessarily affect the figures that we come with? Because it starts with so many units and houses or service sites or whatever, but the municipality adds to that. So it doesn't necessarily affect the end product and what we should be getting in the result here. So I think, you know, we just need to be a little clearer. And it's very complex, Chair, to me. I think because what we seem to be asking is for more and more comparative sort of figures. And I think eventually it's going to become quite impossible. But it's not making sense what we're getting.
Okay, I mean,
it's affected data. You know, the housing provision data is very, very complex. So I was thinking when you are saying the municipality, for instance, Itikweni, they spend 1.2 billion. That is their budget, which is you provide them 800 and something million, and then the rest comes from their budget. Now, in my mind, I'm just asking myself. Now, that statistics, those units that are built with that those funds from the municipality. Where do they feature in? We understand that you are accounting for the funds that have been allocated to yourself. But I think as the human settlement, we need to have a broader picture so that when we stand there, we must stand tall to say, here is the development, because even that money they have, It's government money for, it's public money for that matter, because they collect funds, rates from the people. So that is public funds, it's not their money per se. So it is important that when we report to the public about the housing deliverables, we must be broad-minded. So I think you are going to work towards that, and we do trust that you are going to do it. Okay.
Chair, I mean, we correct. I mean, for example, in Tekwini, they do put in an additional subsidy, where there's, but there's also situations where they do service stands. You know, so I mean, that's the difference. So if you take that, and yes, you correct, Chair. I mean, one of the issues that we've said, and that's why we're moving towards human settlement development, in terms of that, we're going to have to sit down and between ourselves and yourself and the minister, is we're going to have to look at what are we going to measure next year, because the urban settlement development grant is aimed at producing and enhancing, as you say, the composite picture. So what are we delivering as human settlements? It's not about the house, it's not about the site only these days. Next year it's going to be a lot more. So what we focus on is not going to be the numbers, but the qualitative issues. So I take that, and it's something that we're working on, particularly in relation to the policy and the monitoring issue. The issue of the data, yes, correctly, Chair, and that's why we said we'll come back to you on exactly what the issue is, because the Free State, yes, there's a discrepancy in the figures, because one has to verify whether or not out of 1.3 billion you only delivered 5,000 units, and it's an alarm bell, which we said we'll correct. The rectification, I mean, that as far as we are aware, this is what was delivered and signed off by the KZN province. And as we've indicated, Chair, the rectification issue is something that we're busy looking at, particularly in quantifying exactly what the state of that factor is in relation to that. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, my question was not necessarily about rectification program. What I wanted to know is that those houses which are to be rectified are included in this number. Thanks.
They signed off by the province. And whether it includes those 6 months that was reported by the NHPRC, that Chair, I can come back to you on that. I can't venture on that one. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, in a second, just come in because we have to.
Yeah. The question that I asked, it hasn't been answered, the very last one, when I referred to slides 9 and 10 about the total allocation for transfers, and there's this discrepancy.
Chair, that would be the operations of the program. Alan Morris, you want to comment on that one?
Can you just repeat again the question? I didn't get it.
Yeah. Chair, if you look at slide 9, and I'm only looking at the transfer, the total allocation on slide 9 is 15.5 billion. Okay, now go to slide 10, where it also gives the total allocation. And it depends on whether we look at the total adjusted allocation or the total available to provinces. Why is there a difference? There's 15.3 if I take the maximum one.
Yeah. The figure 15.541 billion is subsidies and transfers to institutions. It's a total. It's all the grants and as well as transfers to HDA and other institutions. And the figure on slide 10 is just the grant without money transferred to the institutions. That's why there is a difference.
Oh,
Honourable members, I request that we stop here so that we take other presentations. But I would say that we are still going to engage as the portfolio committee with the whole document. And I think we are very much happy because we have also provided us with this information. And this information is going to also assist us in making a complete analysis. And then most of the issues are going to deal with them when you come for annual reports. Some of these issues will be raised then. And you know that we are going to prepare for our the AAAR reports. So all of this information is going to assist us to interact with yourself now and again. So we'll figure out actually the mobile office. Yeah. So we interact with you now and again with this one. Otherwise today there's nothing that we can finalize because this is a very, very crucial information that will need members to think about it so that we can get the feedback to our reports. What are our observations and what are the advices that we obtain that? But the first aid issue is a crucial one. I think we need a written report about it. That's standing. What is the case then? Okay. Alright. Okay. Okay, let's get the second one.
Thank you, Chair. The accreditation, Chair, the update, with your permission, Chair, I'll take the committee through that one. Chair, just in relation to, we've included in the slide just the rationale for the accreditation. One of the issues that has come up is that accreditation will assist with coordinated development. So there's the horizontal integration. And I'll focus on one of the issues here. Municipality is a logical site for the effective alignment of interdepartmental and intergovernmental funding streams. Chair, in relation to that, if one thinks about it, all funding ends up in a local authority or municipality, and that's where it gets spent, and that's where it gets coordinated. So as the national and the provincial departments, we still work in our silos, but what we need to sort of agree is that at a municipal level it comes together and it gets coordinated. That's it. And then there's also the increased opportunities for the application of innovative planning principles. So the point about the accreditation is how do we sort of improve and innovate in relation to our planning. The accelerated delivery, the vertical integration, and that's what we spoke about, the national, provincial, and local. I think the one issue that always comes up is that if you take a human settlement development, it all comes together at the municipality. And the municipality holds the key in relation to the planning authority, the approval, and those kind of things. And that's in the second point there. I think what we're speaking about is the authority, accountability, and responsibility. How do we do that? And I think, Chair, in the last year, if you look at the discussions and the interaction between the department and yourself, it is about those three things: the authority, the accountability, and the responsibility. Who holds who accountable? Who holds who responsible? And who has the necessary authority? And that's what accreditation does. It resolves that issue, because I think one of the issues we need to be able to understand is that if something's not working, one doesn't go in and take over the function. One goes in and improve it, because then you end up with duplication. And I think it's about the monitoring and oversight. I think the one issue in relation to the implementation protocol that we spoke about, it focuses on intergovernmental relations, because I think what we tend to forget is that we've got an Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, and sometimes we don't adhere to it, and that's why we have these kinds of problems. And I think what we try to do through the accreditation process and the implementation protocol is try and resolve those things. So it's about partnership. It's not about talking down to people, but it's talking with the provinces and the municipalities. It's purpose-driven, it's delivery-focused, there's a social contract, and it's integrated. So that's the, and our focus is basically that middle part. What is the human settlement priority that we want to determine? That's the be-all and end-all. It's not about personality, it's not about arrogance, it's not about who controls what. And sometimes there's this whole obsession with resources. It's about accountability for resources and how it gets spent, and that's what the accreditation. The mandate and development, and I think, Chair, we've gone through this slide and we've said, in particularly in relation to that, the second last point there, in the 2010 delivery agreements, municipal accreditation is a sub-output because it's a long-standing principle that delivery is best taken and done at the local level, and it supplements a whole range of things that we've done as government. So the ward system, a whole range of things that we've done. The implementation progress today, Chair, in March we had the accreditation certification. The accredited municipalities, I don't know, Chair, I don't know if it came out.
That's it, because
did it not come out?
Our page.
Don't want us to know what it is. Sorry,
Jay. When I was going to be attended to, we'll meet her there.
I can change that into white. I should have done
it.
Sorry, Jay.
The color.
Yeah. No, Jay, that's nothing like wanting to do that. Jay, the accredited I think the one issue that we as national, and I speak including this committee, is that the provinces are the responsible for accrediting. But we know some of the challenges because it's now about power, it's about accountability. So what we have done is that the accredited municipalities and the provinces are in the process of strengthening the IGR. So there's a meticulous process to manage the transitional process of delegating functions to municipalities. And we want to do that very carefully so that we don't affect delivery, but we also don't undermine what government wants us to do in relation to the accreditation. And it's about this kind of approach that some of the municipalities we know have got challenges. The issue is how do we improve it and how do we strengthen it, even if there are metros in that. They are in the process of developing transitional plans and the memorandum of understanding on delegated functions. We've indicated that it shouldn't be a memorandum of understanding, it should be an implementation protocol. Okay. So they've changed that, and that is to align capacity, transfer staff, assets, and contracts. And you'll see we're focusing on that. So the capacity, some of the provinces have got capacity. So where there's a capacity in the province and where it needs to be supplemented, it doesn't have to duplicate it, but they're going to have to manage and assist each other in that. And it also includes transfer of staff. And I think the point about it is, as the national department, we've indicated, no one is absolved from this. So it might include sort of national. They need to work out the operational funding because there's municipalities keep on raising this issue about unfunded mandates and those kind of things. So there are existing operational funding issues that they have to resolve. What we want to be able to do, Chair, and that's in the current DORA, is gazette allocations to accredit to municipalities and enter into a payment schedule. That gives certainty to the municipalities, so they can plan. And no one can blame each other. So you can't have the province come in and saying there's problems with planning approval, the township establishment, and those kind of things. So that doesn't happen. The municipality must prepare an annual housing budget allocation plan, and that Mr. Alanser will speak about it. We've together with Treasury entered into a process, and I think, I mean, I think what we need to alert the committee is that this committee is then going to have to take sort of some responsibility about oversighting those plans. And it's a good thing, because I think that's the one thing, because then it gives us this issue that we discussed earlier. You get a better, clearer picture when you have that municipal planning process at our disposal, and it's been the one sort of weak link in the. They've also got a annual housing implementation management plan, because there's the ongoing management. What we don't want to do is accredit municipalities, they fail, and we all have egg on our face. Not that we, I mean, I think failure is not an option in relation to this, because it's about delivery, it's about and then national and province to continue providing ongoing accreditation support. So accreditation is not an event; it's a process. It may take 5 years, it may take 10 years, but it's a process, and once that's been, it will be the oversight and the MNE role on that issue. The IGR protocol, as we've indicated, what it will include is funding flow and institutional arrangements, and determines the intergovernmental protocol. The funding arrangements relate to the allocation of the human settlement subsidy funds and the administrative and operational costs. So there's no uncertainty, and these are just some of the issues that will be included in that implementation protocol. And we said we want to have drafts completed by the end of June on this. To maintain the accreditation principle of funding flows, functions, and to ensure funding certainty, because that has been the one issue that municipalities and provinces have clearly indicated. And then there's the two type of funding dedicated to accredited municipalities, the HSDG and the USDG. The Human Settlements Development Grant, we've indicated there, I mean, it's funding to accredited municipalities, and that's in the form of the subsidies and the operational costs. It's an equitable subsidy allocation from the National Housing Subsidy Budget. Chair, this issue, the third point, there's a formula based on allocation to provinces and accredited municipalities. So we almost know what the formulas are in relation to this, because we've had these kinds of issues where we said some of your urban areas or urban cities and towns have said they've been shortchanged. But we need to grapple with that. And it's a planning principle that we'll bring both to MinMec and yourselves on that. For level 1 and 2, that certification process took place, we'll hold allocated dedicated funds and disperse against performance. And I think it's a principle that you've spoken about. So you'll see we've already filtered that. And not only are we going to hold, not only are we expecting the provinces to hold municipalities accountable against this, but it's a principle we want to apply to the provinces. You know, we hold the dedicated funds and we disperse against performance. The issue is just changing people's behavior and convention, where you've got, you know, you transfer and no one holds anyone accountable, and that's it. Where an accredited municipality will not be able to utilize its subsidy budget in a particular, the projected unutilized portion of funds shall be reallocated to other programs and or municipality. I think the point here is, Chair, it's not about, you know, if you penalize a province or municipality, and in this case accreditation, the point is the community suffers. Citizens suffer. So those punitive measures, we say, must be tempered against what we put in place, so that the citizens of or communities don't suffer because of the poor performance of a municipality. And I think that's the whole point. Sometimes we lose sight of the fact that you want to sort of hold municipalities accountable and communities suffer. And it's a mechanism that the provinces will have to resolve it. The operational costs, we've indicated that we don't want any excuses for not for municipalities saying they're unable to perform because we recognize and accept in wider responsibilities delegated upon accreditation, municipalities will be incurring higher operational costs, but not unreasonable, we ask in saying. So, and OPSCAT does provide that. There is an accreditation fee for accreditation linked or delegated functions only, and not for other functions. The point is, municipalities must not escape their responsibility for human settlements development in their areas. So they can't say, it's not our function, and until we get the money, no. You take responsibility for communities in your area, and you take, and it's about the, it's about the equity, and it's about the equality in how delivery gets based. The grants. I mean, on the urban settlement development grant, and it might be overlapping. But that, I think, the urban settlement development grant. One of the good things about it is it compels provinces and municipalities to work together. And the point, Chair, is that we, and I'm including us with yourselves, then have the ability to have the stick. Because the point about this exercise is we really don't want to know who's not talking to who. That's not our problem. It's what plan you put on the table and what money we've given you and how it's been implemented. So that's what it. We've asked the Metro Council that have developed the built environment performance plan and currently being evaluated by a panel with ourselves, Treasury, together with the sector department. And it's quite a nice process because we're getting to, and at some point, you know, you might want to sit as observers on it, but it really gives you a really, because it's a day where you interrogate, you know, find out what money is being, where the money is being used. And this process will be completed at the end of June, after which the final plans will be submitted for approval. And then the monitoring processes. The provinces and municipalities, with the support of the department, are expected to improve and enhance environmental planning and relations. And I think this has been the weak spot. I mean, provincial planning, monitoring and evaluation frameworks for USDG, reporting frameworks. Because we've all been involved in wanting to focus on implementation, we've taken our eye off the ball in relation to monitoring and evaluation. So you've had this poor quality, poor management and performance, and those issues are being dealt with. We're asking for municipal delivery agreements on outcome 8. So the expectation is that for the USDG money that you receive, your metro mayors will have to sign a delivery agreement with the minister. Because if you know, in terms of the intergovernmental relations framework, the metropolitan municipalities sit on the presidential coordinating committee. They do sit there with together with the premiers. So it's about this accountability to the president and cabinet as well as the legislature through those processes. Thanks, Chair.
Comments? Okay. All the best. It's Gloria. And then you come after Gloria.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you very much for that that update. I think this is actually very exciting that we're moving in this direction. And I think you started to touch on some of my concerns, and that is this whole communication between the province and the municipalities. I think it is of great concern, and we've seen it. They're not talking to each other. So I think my first question would be, you speak about this day when you interrogate the plans and everything. Is that part, do the MECs and the mayors and the municipal managers, managers, the people concerned, do they know what this is all about and this IGR thing? And what role is the department playing in making sure? Because, frankly, I think we've got a long way to go here, and that would be a concern. The other thing is this accreditation. I take it, and I'm getting a little bit worried because sometimes I seem to hear that you still, and I know it's a process, but in order to have level 2 accreditation, there's got to be certain capacity within the municipality. Are we sure that those municipalities allocated, you in your own mind, are sure that capacity is available? And then just another question I would like to know, and I hear that everything's underway, so that is good, but which municipalities, and there must be one or two of the metros in your mind, are ready to begin to work towards the level 3? Because, you know, whilst the province still holds the money bag, I still foresee there can be some problems here. But or are we not even looking at municipalities that have the potential at this point in time to have that level 3 status?
Thank you, Chairperson. My question or comment, in fact, is very, or follows up on the concern that Member Bowman raised. But I also want to thank the department for this. It gives us a little bit more clarity on this whole accreditation thing. The concern that I do have, and it's linked to what Neville said about this power struggle between provinces and municipalities and so on, which we know does exist. And yet the provinces are responsible to approve the accreditation. I would have thought that the national department, if the province go through a process, they then make a recommendation and that the national department review this and that they make the final decision. That would have been the logical thing for me to do. There is one concern in this entire presentation that I do have, Chairperson. I almost get the impression, and I hope I'm wrong, and I want to give an analogy here, but I get the impression we're in a situation here that for whatever reasons it was decided to accredit particular metros. And we're now going back and looking at whether they can in fact fulfill that responsibility. That's the impression I'm getting. And the analogy that I want to give is like giving somebody a driver's license and then teaching them to drive. And I hope I'm wrong, Chairperson, because then it's almost doomed to fail if we, for whatever strange reasons it was done, and now we're putting in place this whole thing about will they be able to do that, can they do that, do they have that resources. My interpretation would have been you actually check whether they've got all that in place and then the accreditation takes place. It does appear to be the other way around. Thank you, Chair.
I think on the issue of this IGR issue between the municipalities and the provinces, I really think that you are going to put your effort there. Because, you know, it's embarrassing to us as public representatives. When you get there, the district will present, in fact, the province will present. And then you proceed down to the district. Then when you get to the district, you get something else. And you feel embarrassed. Now, when you get more down to the municipalities, you know, the district will present, and then the municipality will come up and say, hi, stop, this is not the thing that we know. And some other municipalities will have a decency to say they keep quiet, and then when we leave the door, they will come to us and say, this presentation is not the true reflection of what is going on. You know, this is embarrassing. I don't know how I'm going to manage this. Otherwise, you have got a responsibility. I think you are going to manage it, as we are always giving you this information, the coordination, because it's about the coordination. You are having a huge responsibility. And unfortunately, that responsibility lies in my hand, and you are not going to take it. It's irrespective of what is there, the accountability and so on, responsibility. But at the end of the day, Nina, you represent national. When we talk of national, you represent Elise. And I don't think you in your mind, do you ever think of your responsibility, how important it is? You see, yeah, you know, no, we are official. So we cannot, we don't have an authority over other officials. But need to think critically. Good. Forget about yourself to Arense. Just think, who am I in this country? You are representing JZ. You're representing JZ. No one else is representing JZ other than the national department. Because you are the one, you are the ones who have to ensure that the national objective is achieved. If you can think of that, get an OEM. You can just pull your head up and say, the president has spoken, and this is going to happen. And then you say, oh, there is an obstacle there. How do we remove that obstacle? If you can't remove it on ourselves, who else can assist us? This is the end. You are representing the state, the whole state. Because you are representing the state president. Please. Please. We always say we are here as the portfolio committee. For instance, you said you are going to amend the Housing Act 2 years ago. But we have not come up front. Yes, we have received your program and we have put your program, but we are expecting a disappointment that you are not going to make your time frames that you have given to us, that you are going to bring this legislation before us. Because if we can get to that Housing Act, there's quite a lot of things that can be rectified there, so that you are able to work properly. But it's not coming. Now we shift the November 2012. Well, fine. It must come before the committee. We are accepting that. So I'm trying to say, you must not feel you need a daily. You must think of yourself, who you are in this country. Okay, just respond and then we put them.
In relation to the communication between the provinces and the municipalities, I mean, do the mayors and the MECs know about the process? I mean, we made a presentation and there's been updates on the accreditation together with the Urban Settlements Development Grant to the two main mechanisms adopted. So everyone, and that includes the HOD, so they are aware of it. In relation to how it gets interpreted and how it gets managed, I think, without wanting to buy face, I think some of the times is that there's more consensus amongst the politicians than there is amongst the administration, because that's where some of the bigger problems lie, is the differences in interpretation and application by administration, and that's an issue we're dealing with. So our assumption is that we've done the work And it, as you say, Chair, if I sit here, I represent the minister, I represent the DG, I represent the president in what I say and how we act and how we behave. So because you can't go into every forum and assume no one knows anything. Because if I sit here, I think that's the assumption that you have. So that's our approach. And yes, there's a degree of unhappiness about how we push in this process and how we foster it. So yes, there's officials that obviously are going to raise these things, and you'll probably get to hear about it, about how pushy the national officials are on accreditation and all those kind of things. But I think the point is that it's in the best interest of development and the developmental state that we want to achieve. So that's it. The capacity available is, you know, the metros have always said that there's this chicken and egg situation. You know, we can't build the capacity if we don't have the function and the resources. So, you know, it's that. So we're at that stage, and it's a good stage because we said, now, well, here's the stuff. We're asking you to gazette stuff. We want the provinces to gazette by the end of this month. So we're saying, there's the month. And I think that responds to member states. No, we're not backtracking on this process. I mean, there's no process that, I mean, we've gone through a process, we've identified certain weaknesses in those metros, but notwithstanding those weaknesses, it's not fatal, because you're not going to have a situation where everything's perfect. I mean, we've got problems in our provinces, we've got problems in some of our departments, but that doesn't necessarily mean you can't perform the function. So no, I mean, as you say, Chair, this is not something that we're doing because government or the state says we should do it. It's something that we believe in, and I can tell you something. As officials, we believe in it, and we support it. So we're not doing this because we get paid or we. I think the point is, and Anton will say this because we spoke about it the other day, particularly in relation to your last point, is the power that we have as officials to change people's lives. And I suppose it's yourselves as well. And that is sometimes very scary. And I think if we sit in this room, we all probably live or stay in a ward where there's an informal settlement or there's a slum. And those things confront us every day. And Anton will bear that in mind. I raised it the other day. Just remember the power you have as an official to change people's lives. And that is a scary thing. Thank you. and I mean we sort of welcome comment on that. This being the first year, so we want to be able to improve it. What the IGR framework and MNE framework is, the capacity support to metros, and the formulation and assessment of the built environment performance plan. That's what BEPT means. It's another new acronym. And then towards implementation, that's the part Mr. Robinson will undertake. Chatting that the context is, we recognize that towns and cities are the engines of economic growth as well as poverty. And there has been growth of poverty within towns and cities. The importance and need of cities to manage rather than respond to urban pressures amongst which economic growth and alleviation of poverty and inequality are priorities. Yes, I think the one thing that we must, in relation to this grant, indicate is that cities exist because of towns and rural areas, and that interdependence. And sometimes, as South Africa, I think what we don't want to lose is the interdependence, because a city or a town cannot function and cannot survive if you don't have your agricultural produce that comes through from your towns and cities. And it's this interdependence and interdependent relationship that we need to. And the classic example that we give is that, I'm not sure if members know, but I mean, which city in the world has the cheapest water? And that's New York. New York has the cheapest water, and there's a very important reason, because New York pays a subsidy to the Catskill rural areas where it draws its water. So the citizens of New York have got an interdependent relationship with that area, and I think it's something that we in all the discourse and all the debate, we forget that Johannesburg exists because of Mpumalanga, and Mpumalanga exists because of Limpopo. So the maize belt and those kind of things, and we need to improve that. So if our towns and cities improve and grow, then that economic and rural base is become sustainable. So it's part of that process. The provision of bulk connector, link, and internal services also, as well as well-located land and public amenities, continues to plague the optimum performance of human settlement sectors, particularly the metro. So there's been this whole issue that provinces and municipalities have come back and said, we can't implement a project because of this bulk, we can't implement because there's a problem with link. And then also, one of the issues that has come up is that when we implement our human settlements programs, we increase the backlog, because what we don't do is we don't build roads, we don't build stormwater, we don't put electricity. So the sustainability of what we're doing is also something that we need to address, and this grant attempts to respond to some of those issues as well. The human settlements mandate is being realized through the delivery agreements and outcome 8, sustainable human settlements and improved the quality of household life. And I think it's one of the issues that I think, you know, if one looks at what happened during the election, one forgets that one of the first visits that President Zuma made was was when he visited, for example, Madela Gufa, an informal settlement in Ekurhuleni. And this was 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago, soon after he came in. So the point about how do we improve the sustainable human settlements, particularly in some of our towns and cities. Then the consolidation of funding is a key issue for the realization of the human settlements mandate. We've indicated that we've moved from housing to human settlements, but we've not done anything in relation to the funding. It's still scattered, it's still there, and if we don't do anything, we'll be right where we were when we started. And we know funding is not the only issue, but it is a key pillar and foundation of the human settlement. So there's a whole issue that, yes, we've got the Human Settlement Development Grant and the Urban Settlement Development Grant, and obviously at some point in the future, Chair, we're going to have to move. I mean, these two grants are going to come together. And the incremental approach is the one that's being preferred. Obviously, if as political principles you think otherwise, that can be moved closer, quicker. And we're working on Treasury next year, for example, to include what's the integrated national energy program. So that grant, the INEP grant, will form part of the USDGs. The background, there was a presentation to the special PCC in May 2010, and I identified the need for appropriate funding. And it also comes out of our discussions and deliberations with this committee. And then the National Treasury and Department of Cooperative Governments embarked on a process of consolidating grants and funding in an incremental manner. So we've been part of that process. The mixity is, committee members will, and Chair, you'll remember, was set up in 2008, and that was the beginnings towards the integration of planning and funding, particularly within the built environment. As a result of all this interaction and discussion, Treasury then went to Cabinet, and there was a Cabinet decision in 2010 that an Urban Settlement Development Grant be established and funding be allocated from the Human Settlement Development Grant and the previous mixed cities. So it's the previous mixed cities, it's a merger of those two. So there's a percentage of the Human Settlement Development Grant that goes into it, and then there's mixed cities, and then Treasury over the MTF, I think, put in an additional $2 billion to establishment. The important thing is, this is not a MIG grant, but it's an urban settlement, it's a new grant. I mean, post 2009, this is the first grant of its type that we've been established. And we can take some sort of pride in saying that it's going some way towards establishing what we want to in relation to the human settlement. Albeit it just in the urban area. The Urban Settlement Development Grant is intended as an instrument for the first phase for metros to address linkage between public housing and economic growth to simultaneously contribute to human settlements outcome 8. And we've managed, and you'll see in the grant framework, we've now included towns and cities. So it's not only metros. So the point is that during the course of next year, and obviously through some of our interaction with and your guidance, there'll be an increase in terms of which towns and cities get included in this. So it's not a grant exclusive to metros. I think we need to do it. It may be so for this year, but obviously we're piloting it or taking, pilot's not a good word to use, but we'll be taking this to its first phase through the metros, because those have demonstrated ability to do this. It intends to integrate the release of well-located land to the function of planning and funding of the built environment. So it's release of land. Encourage cities to be proactive developers of infrastructure on well-located land by mobilizing domestic capital. And it's the point here. Human settlement development and eradication of the housing backlog is not a national sphere responsibility only. It's a provincial, and it's also municipal. So the point is, how does that happen? It should compel improvement in the development planning and improve intergovernmental coordination in all three spheres. The USDG should address pro-poor bias, including economic growth. And I think we've included this because we do not want a situation where this thing gets diluted by a whole range of fancy footwork, particularly by officials in how it gets allocated, and we know that that officials, particularly at a municipal level, are quite innovative in how they want to categorize this. And I think what this does is that it says to us, Anton smiles because Chair, having been on the other side, I know that does and does occur. Not either or, but both, and that's why we focus. USDG must focus, should be on bias towards lowering the costs incurred by poorer households in accessing serviced land with secure tenure. And I think that's the focus of it. I mean, it's about those poorer households in our urban centres who do come from rural, the hinterland, and to be able to ensure that they benefit in the economic growth that does occur in our towns and cities. The USDG, in terms of the grant framework, it speaks about allocations to municipalities to supplement the funding of metro cap. And this is an important point, Chair, because what this does is says you're not only supposed to use the USDG. USDG contributes to what you are supposed to do to poorer households. Because this has been the problem in lots of metros and towns and cities. They say, no, if you don't get money from national government, we can't do anything. And we want to prevent that kind of mentality. There's an example of a town somewhere in the Western Cape where they said, because we didn't get any money from province or national, we couldn't help the households. That's not the attitude that one. To improve the efficiency and coordination of investments in the built environment through providing large municipalities with appropriate resources and control over selection and pursuit of the investment programs. Just one point that I've left out. We still have the current MIG grant. The current MIG grant still exists with COPTA, and that goes to municipalities other than those which receive the USDG. So the MIG grant still exists. So I think we need to be able to just and between ourselves and cooperative governance, we're working out a scheme. I think the one thing, Chair, that we must admit and bring to your attention is that at a national level, there's a really improved relationship and coordination, for example, between ourselves, Department of Cooperative Governance, Treasury, Sport and Recreation, Water Affairs. I mean, there's a really sort of good spirit and application and commitment. So it's, the silos that have been there, it's our money, your money, no, that doesn't exist. And I think this is one of the things that we said, this has enabled us to do this. And the presidency has been important in fostering that relationship. The grant outcome, and this is the important one. I mean, it's enhanced sustainability, human settlements, and improved quality of household life in urban areas. And you'll see this is based on the delivery agreement President Zuma signed with the minister. It's included in the grant framework. So it's not like, unlike the other grant frameworks, this takes directly from the delivery agreement, and it speaks to exactly what the President had requested. So what it speaks about, increased availability of serviced urban land parcels. It's a number that they need to give us. So if you want to be able to measure it, what's that? Increased average density of cities. So how do they improve densities? How do they will increase security of tenure, irrespective of ownership or rental, formal or informal structure security. The point here is they need to give us, in relation to the grant, how are you spending it on poorer households to increase their security of tenure? How are you increasing their service availability of serviced land? The USDG allocation to metros, Chair, I mean, just on slide 10, the one before, which is the line, if you and yourself just go to the grant framework, you'll see it's quite a comprehensive is very focused on human settlement development. So it speaks about service rights. It even allows the ability to promote affordability in the gap market. So it's not only that, but service stands for gap market working families. So it's very focused and very the allocation to the metros, the Eastern Cape, Nelson Mandela for this financial year gets 423 million, Buffalo City gets 502. The basis of these allocations, Chair, is a weighted average because we're in a transitional phase. So you've got there was a MIG formula that applied, and we also then applied a weighted average of the human settlement development grant formula that applied to these provinces. So Buffalo City gets 502, Mangaung gets 411, Gauteng in terms of City of Joburg gets just under 1.1. Ekurhuleni saying it's about 1 billion. Tshwane 891. KZN Ekurhuleni gets 1 billion and 91, and then the Western Cape 824. For this financial year, it comes to 6.2 billion. For the next financial year, 7.4, 8.1. I think the important thing here, Chair, is that what it's done is, particularly in relation to human settlements, it's in effect the bottom line, our allocation to human settlements or our availability of funding to human settlements has increased by those figures. You know, and that's the point that we need to be focusing on. So we've got more money to be able to perform. It's not new money, you know, it's been within the system, but it's now more focused. The responsibility for all of us is how do we sort of use this money more effectively. Anton will take us through this, the next chair, because he's been managing this process.
These final slides, members, are really just to give you an update on what's been happening in respect of the planning for the USDG, but also a preface, if you will, for the presentations that the cities will be making toward the end of June. We've alluded to both the draft policy and the DORA framework. We've made copies available to you. For ease of reading, we've provided you with a presentation of the policy framework. It is in place. We're looking to get final approval around August. We've talked about built environment performance plans. These are the plans that are generated by these larger municipalities, metros, and an aspect that is captured within those plans, built environment performance plans, are how those metros would be using the USDG. If you just flash back to slide number 9 in the handout, you don't need to go back, but you'll see that the USDG Schedule 4 grant is a supplementary grant directed to municipalities. So then the rationale for that was then, well, have the USDG as a component of your local built environment performance plan. So if we could just go back to that one back, thanks. Members, one of the reasons why we in fact requested that the presentations to yourself or the briefings to yourself be deferred to the last week of June, that we're currently in the process of evaluating and in having consultations with the cities on the first draft of those BEPPs and how the USDG is going to be used. The final drafts of those plans are expected in the third week of June, which would place place us all in good stead when the cities have their final plans and able to then talk to not only the department but to the committee. First tranche payments happen on the 1st of July and then implementation kicks in. This slide has, in a sense, by and large, been talked about in the previous presentation. Say for the first one, there's been a fair amount of work and collaboration between ourselves and National Treasury in terms of guiding methods on financial sustainability of their capital investment programs, and I'll talk to this in probably about two slides time. We've talked about I'm not going to elaborate on the need for all three spheres of government to really begin to talk to one another around issues around just institutional arrangements, clarifying the roles and responsibilities, the oversight functions of national and provincial government, and strengthening the implementation of i.e. local government. The issue of the human settlements development grant and how municipalities access the human settlements development grant, remembering of course that this is a Schedule 5 grant which is doored to provinces, and in the previous presentation the COO alluded to the fact that provinces are in fact compelled in terms of the Division of Revenue Act to gazette their funding commitments to these accredited metros. I'll talk about this in I think the next slide or two. Chair and members, the remaining slides and I certainly won't be doing justice to the overview or the evaluation that has taken place thus far, but I thought it useful in preparation for your sessions with the cities, just to give you a quick and dirty, if you like, of what we've been picking up, and not only in terms of the plans, but institutionally, some of the cursory observations. The cities have, to a large extent, responded to the call of Outcome 8, and have responded fairly positively, but at the expense of neglecting the aspect of economic growth. That is something that certainly we've brought to the attention of the cities. I think at this point it may be important to note that and acknowledge that there had not been a long lead in time for the establishment of USDG or announcement of USDG to in fact all spheres, particularly local government. So you will find that when the cities do present, you'll find that there are a significant percentage of this grant that is used for ongoing big cities projects. And in much the same way as housing projects are multi-year, these bulk infrastructure projects, for example, funding commitments have been made on the premise that mixed cities would be learning. So I think one needs to acknowledge that there is going to be a slowing down or a conclusion of those old mixed cities projects, and at the same time also a much stronger focus. In a fair amount of cases, there has been a fortunate or coincidental overlap around where boxed infrastructure had been targeted under big cities and its direct relationship with housing human settlements projects. Next slide. As I've indicated, not that there is a policy gap, but
But there is a draft policy in place, and there is the DORA framework, and happy to report that the cities, by and large, have attempted to work within those frameworks. And as the COO has indicated, as you know, these DORA frameworks are revised annually, and we welcome comments and inputs from the committee around its fine tuning. Bullet point number two is probably one of the more contentious ones and has already been talked about at length. The fact that cities have access to the USDG. They also have access to the HSDG, but the manner, particularly how they access that HSDG, is a bone of contention. Okay, and in the interest of time, I'm not going to elaborate on. I'm sure everyone in the room is fully aware of the dynamics, and I do not want to use the word politics behind this one, because I'm going to leave that to the politicians. Slide number next is an important one, because if you recall, slide number 9, schedule 4, USDG is meant to supplement. This is an important one, members, because you will find, and without wanting to cite any particular cities, and I think again the COO has alluded to this, you find that some city or some of the developmental programs of some of the cities are completely grant dependent. Now that cannot be a healthy situation, because all along we've been saying, well, we're able to facilitate the whole argument around unfunded mandate. We've made significant inroads. Well, as cities, what are you bringing to the party? I think it would be important for us to, it would be remiss of us not to give you the heads up, and particularly to look at this aspect, that some cities' developmental programs are completely grant dependent. Yes, one needs to acknowledge that there's been an economic downturn, FIFA 2010 has come and gone, but what is often forgotten is that a lot of these cities are still heavily in debt, so they needed to service all of those. So there is a limited fiscus, but these are issues that need to be taken into account when looking at these plans, and particularly their ability to deliver on commitments that ought to be made in terms of outcome rates. Because remember, of course, that at the end of the day, well, not only the minister, but the portfolio committee is going to ask, well, how have you used USDG, and what have you as a city contributed to making outcome 8 and USDG used effectively and efficiently? A point which does not appear on the presentation, but I think it needs to be said. Of all of the, invariably, when one sees the presentations that the cities are making, invariably on the first or second slide, the issue of spatial patterns, spatial city patterns in the history, it's called the stubborn apartheid city. It gets coined and gets tweeted every now and again, but invariably on the first, on the second slide that appears. And in terms of the strategy, we needed to break it down. I'm not saying that, but we're certainly not saying that USDG becomes the silver bullet. But in very few instances are we in fact seeing that USDG is used as an intervening tool. Much is said about integration and the using transport to begin to integrate cities or integrate communities within cities. But that clinical incision where you spatially begin to break down those patterns, we're still not seeing enough of that.
In some instances, we're not seeing any of it. And again, while we do acknowledge that there are various tools and mechanisms, there's the spatial planning and land use management bill that is up for discussion. So you've got legislative tools and instruments, and then you've got financial tools and instruments. And USDG is part of that. And yeah, like I said, we certainly don't see this as the silver bullet that's going to break or make those incisions. But we would have liked to have seen more of that happening. Final slide, Chair. That's the one. A year ago we talked about the Human Settlements Fund, and that we need to change how the housing grant gets used. We now have the USDG as that interim measure, so it is part of the family of human settlement grants. Over the NTEF, we're talking about an additional 20 billion rand, which goes directly to metros over a 3-year period. We see that USDG will augment and support grant allocations from provinces to municipalities under the Human Settlements Development Grant, and must go further to address infrastructure and land requirements, as well as promoting economic growth. Chairperson, thank you very much.
CEO?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I think the point is that, and you'll see that as a department, and I think, as national, what we've indicated particularly is that there's the national development imperative, which both provinces and local authorities must. So if we're providing you with the money, we must now have a say about how that money gets utilized and how it gets allocated. And particularly, I think the good shift is both as national, we're now taking responsibility, and I think we're hoping that this presentation, particularly the points that Anton has raised, gives you some kind of indication about, and yes, maybe we dance around and maybe we're not being assertive. So for example, the issue that Anton raises about the stubbornness and breaking down this apartheid legacy. We want the USDG to do that. And I think we're not going to be apologetic about reaffirming those kinds of things. And Chair, I thought about it yesterday and hopefully through your office, Chair. I don't know if members have seen the book Deep Slit by Anton Harbour. And with your permission, Chair, without wanting to be seen to be influencing you, but maybe we can make a contribution to each of the members or a copy of the book. But it gives a really good indication of what is happening in our communities. I mean, it's a fair reflection. And I think we must break down these stereotypes of what is happening in poor households, particularly in towns and cities, because there's human beings and there's lives, and as government we've got to start responding to that. Not that we haven't, but I think it's a very sobering kind of project, and perhaps the USDG does do that in many respects. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think you have assisted us now, because we have been long waiting for this briefing, and we are always pushing it further and further and further. And another thing, I think we have been sitting here cold, because there was this notion of that the NIC grant has been taken to human settlement. So as this portfolio economy, sometimes you feel, although we are proud of this grant, but there are people who keep on telling us that no, this grant was supposed to come to us. So I think now you have broken that notion, and it's going to assist us. And I still, we still have to make a presentation to some of those consent people in one of the sessions that are going to be arranged. So that we can also open work now freely. And then when we pronounce this as the public representative, we feel that we are confident about it. Let me give the members just to make a few comments. Honorable comments. Honorable Doris. Honorable. Let me start by Doris and then Bowman. Stay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on the last slide, the impact of the U.S. teachers. If the Metro is not utilizing all the grants or understands, is the department going to... You mentioned that this grant will be... The Metros will be given this grant over a period of 3 years. If it understands, then is the department going to channel to allocate or transfer money to that Metro or not? Thanks.
Let me also then just add to that and to say, it's my understanding these the drafts that the beneficiary cities are now who are benefiting from this grant are going to present by the third week in June. Is that like a business plan? I think that's my question on that. Because, and then it would seem, you know, very often when we get these grants and monies, we're a long time in the planning before the implementation stage, so, you know, it sort of kind of drags on. But if this then is the case, because then we will be able to have those municipalities appear before us, and I understand you've rescheduled that.
By the 29th.
And also, this is going to give us a direct oversight there, so I think we will be pointing fingers backwards here also. If it's not just like this, it's going to be like this. Because if we're not exercising our oversight properly, then at the end of the day, we are going to be answerable to the people not getting stuff on the ground. Also, yes, I'm glad you clarified the MRG, because my understanding was that the MRG, that was a question I was going to ask you, was that completely taken up in the USDG, or was there still part of it out there? And you've answered that. I also see in your framework here, as I just quickly looked at it, you've got a list of towns now that will be, I don't know if it's in that order that they're going to come on stream, because that was going to be my next question. You know, when I look at a place like in Sunduzi, for example, phew, they need some infrastructure stuff in all those informal settlements, you know, that surround them there. So you say the question is, you know, those lists that you've given us in here of the cities, could there be others added to that list, or is that just an idea of where we're going with it? I think that's as far as I need to go with this.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to firstly follow up on a question Member Bowman asked. I also had some confusion around the MIG and the USDG grant. And initially I thought the one was being absorbed into the other until you went into your presentation. And you made it clear that there was some cities that would still receive that. However, my understanding is that the actual money, the actual funds have been absorbed into the USDG grant. So we'll get a situation where we'll get two separate figures that X is still available is a MIG grant that will be, so we'll be able to make a clear differentiation between the two. Now, having said that, the very first point I made when you started your presentation, strangely enough, and again you addressed it, I put here and I wrote here and I'm reading it, grant must not give Metro's excuse not to fulfill responsibility of related services. Grant must augment and enhance delivery, and you then started to address that. Now, I think inevitably there's going to be some Metro that's going to try and get away with it. And I was just wondering, because the other question that follows up on that is, I almost think that the transfers will take place pretty much like the current human development grant, where irrespective of whether they perform or whether they're being monitored, on a quarterly basis, the money will be sent across to them, which obviously, as we've explained, is of some concern. Now, should one not try and introduce some sort of a carrot, some sort of a motivation? And there can be exceptions to that depending on obviously the financial capabilities, but shouldn't there be something where you say, look, for every rand that you spend, we will give you 2 rand in terms of that. But exceptions too, because you don't want the richer Metro then to dominate and get all the money. But there's got to be some sort of motivation for them to put in their own funds as well. Otherwise, it's actually not going to be sustainable, as you've pointed out. So I want to leave that as a suggestion that it be looked at, but it can't be a strictly enforceable. Otherwise, you're going to exclude some that actually can't contribute. The draft plans. Member Borman and myself, on behalf of the committee, attended a session at National Treasury in Pretoria, and they seem to, and you make reference that they're assisting you. There were two or three cities that made a presentation, two. And it was draft, but we got very much the same impression that you did. That was almost going on as usual, business as usual type of thing in terms of planning new cities and so on. Now, is there, in terms of the plans that need to be submitted by June, is there this partnership with Treasury to guide, to assist them, so that when they come with that final thing, it's not something that you're going to have to send them back and for the next 3 months to review and you know, get it right, because that will then delay the implementation of all of this. So in the run-up to that final deadline, is there assistance from the department and from Treasury? Chair, I needed an explanation on slide 14. When you said, what I wrote on here is I said, explain why neglect economic growth. Why that statement? Because to my mind, if a city is going to use it for infrastructure, for bulk services, it indirectly contributes towards economic growth. So what is your statement there somewhere on 14 that refers to neglect economic growth? If you can just explain that to me, please. Thank you, Chief.
I'm going to attempt to and then have the covering of my CLO to fill out all of the gaps. The conditionalities, perhaps I should just skip the first one on conditionalities of the grant until the member returns. Around the aspect of the readiness to implement, I think what the cities have going for them are the fact that, as I'd indicated, a lot of the projects, they in fact have enough projects to keep going based on the big city allocations that they've received or commitments that they've received over the MTEF. And in that regard, some of the first iterations of these plans, we've in very simple terms said, look, this doesn't at all talk to our climate. This appears to be business as usual. And the response to that in the latest iteration of the built environment performance plans, you could see that there has been a shift in thinking. There has been a reprioritization of some of those plans to talk specifically to the Department of Human Settlements national priorities. So I don't believe that the readiness, there would be a problem to move with the grant allocation. Already, that discussion around expanding the list of cities has come up. And coincidentally, the Msunduzis, the Rustenburgs, the Lepalalis, those secondary towns of significance those discussions are already taking place. If one looks, for example, at just from the aspect of growth and of migration, the trends that are beginning to emerge now is that people's survival chances are found to be better in those very towns and cities. And yet the irony is that those are the very centers that are less prepared and less capacitated, both in terms of capital and operational resources, to actually deal with that influx and migration. So this is the first shot at USDG. I think it made sense that you had mixed cities and there was a very specific list of cities. I also think that currently the list as it stands relates to those and is consistent with the accreditation that has been accorded to those to the larger metros. But I certainly would, and I'm expressing an opinion here, could not see that the list would be finite, and it would need to. Just Rustenburg, for example, is an obvious case in point. And there are others as well. The conditionalities, the question was asked around underspending and what happens. I just draw your attention to the draft the DORA framework. It's set out there in chapter and verse. One of the conditionalities around the disbursement of this grant is in fact the submission and the review of performance plans, of performance targets, as a conditionality to the transfer of second, third, and fourth tranche payments. It in fact has raised the ante for us as a department, particularly in exercising our oversight function. And certainly we'd like to see something similar happen around the HSDG, I think in relation to the first presentation that we had this morning. And then finally my input is around the built environment performance plan evaluations. It's really just to concur with the comment that you had made around the plans, the submission of those plans, and our engagement with the cities. So this isn't just a plan which gets handed to us and we simply just hand out the tranche payments. It pretty much is a process that and in fact you've been party to with the provinces around the human settlements development grant. In this instance, though, I think we've in fact advanced the level of the game here, in that we have the presidency, we've got national treasury, we've got COPTA, transport, sport and recreation, I think energy, SALGA, cities network, and a number of built environment, shall we call them eminent third people, who in fact form part of the panel. And these one-day sessions that we've had were in response to the plans that we've received, as well as the presentations that have been made. So these one-day discussions then, we're essentially telling the cities, well, consider these aspects, and use them in the further fine-tuning of the plans. Just to give you a sense of what is likely to happen when the cities when they do present to the committee, you very likely are going to get a presentation which would start off with their IDP, their strategic plan, where they're coming from, what are the key priorities, their development trajectory is not necessarily over a 3-4, but sometimes over a 15-20-year, 25-year period, where they're wanting to go, and then, right at the end, just a sense of how the USDG is going to contribute to that their built environment performance plan. So you get a really good sense of where the city is headed. Needing to understand that the focus is not as sharp as it would be with the provincial department, because their mandate is human settlement development. With the city, it is around, we put it on the slide there, it is around managing city growth. So talking to a whole list of issues which ultimately talk about governance and efficient managing of the city, of the, you know, the various areas. So the focus would be quite broader than is normally the case. But ultimately, and we have made the point of saying, you know, it's good and well telling us, and we understand the reason and the logic for explaining those bigger plans, but at the end of the day, you're getting an allocation from us, we need to know what the money is buying. So we're needing to strike a balance between those two, in terms of our oversight function, being overly pedantic about how you're spending your $502 million, and recognizing that they're in fact dealing with much bigger issues than simply where the next bulk infrastructure project is going to be going.
Thanks. Chair, I mean, just to reiterate, I mean, as part of the framework, I mean, we say Transport, the second, third, and fourth installment will be conditional upon submission and approval of signed off quarterly report. So one of the points that in our deliberations with the provinces said this is a big bang approach. We haven't adequately prepared. I mean, the point is, how does one adequately prepare? I mean, the point is, we put pressure on our monitoring and evaluation ourselves, because said, you know what, get your act together, because this is not business as usual. Someone's going to have to sign off that quarterly report, and that quarterly report doesn't accurately reflect. Then we're going to have to account to yourselves and the minister about why those things are not done properly. So I think you'll see, and what we said is we can introduce these things into the HSDG, because that's why we said, you know, it's work in progress, but what we've built on the lessons of what we've learned, and we need to implement on the HSDG. On the issue around the question of the economic growth, I don't think we're saying we don't want to focus on economic growth. I think what that says is there should be a focus, because the one is dependent on the other. And that's what we're saying, is that show us and indicate to us how the USDG will assist not only poor households in terms of alleviation, eradication of poverty, inequality, and underdevelopment, but promote economic growth. One of the problems you've had in your cities is that it just hasn't been focused in the correct areas where the poor have been located, and we've found a lot of sort of dilution of what we want to achieve. In relation to just the point on guiding of the business plan, National Treasury are in the process of engaging with the World Bank for grant assistance for what they call a large cities and towns program, so that we can provide that assistance to them. I think what we can say together as a collective of the human settlement sector is that we're a little ahead of the curve in terms of the monitoring, evaluation, and the implementation of some of the stuff that's been identified as weaknesses, particularly in local government. The last point, the second but last one, the MIG cities came across. The MIG cities still exist. I just want to reiterate that point. I don't know what the amount is. The MIG still exists. So those cities that, those metros that don't receive the USDG will get MIG.
It's not,
yeah, it's not both. You don't get, yeah. Yeah, so that's it. I can send through an email to yourself, Chair, on what exactly the amount is. I'm not sure what, I think it's about 14 or 15 billion. I'm not sure what the total amount is for MIG, but we can get that. The issue is that we've spoken about, and that's why, you know, there were a couple of ideological issues. The point was that we've got large towns and cities. This list, and we've agreed with Treasury, is not confined to this, because there are a number of other towns and cities that there are. So, for example, I mean, there's a substantial amount of pressure on us. For example, Lepalale, Rustenburg, KSD district, covering specifically Amtata, and then there's Msunduzi. So there's all those there, and I think the point is we're speaking about urban cities, towns and cities. You know, we're not confining to metros. You know, it's not a metro confined, because I think the point is that we're moving towards a situation where we've got to build up the capacity, we've got to provide the funding, because the infrastructure, the services, and the people there are in requirement of that. So that's what we mean. Oversight and accountability, Chair. I'm sure you are going to wrap us over the knuckles for weaknesses. We hope that doesn't happen. I think as a department, we understand we've got to get our act together quickly, particularly in relation to the last point. This gives the committee a really good sense of what's happening in local authorities. So when those presentations do come here, you'll have a good insight. I'm not sure how many days, just sort of a word of caution, you might want to sort of spread it over 2 days or 3 days. I think, in fact, 3 days would be, because they're quite in-depth. And I think the quality of it is good, because the metros, they've got sometimes better capacity than we think they do. So it would be, thanks, Chair.
Okay.
No,
that was a very, very good an information session, and I think it's worthwhile. We thank the department for that. Is there any last one? What is it? No, I thought it's called a She's enjoying. She's enjoying to be here. Thank you very much, CEO, with your tip, for bringing us this very important information. And I think we are starting a new year on the right foot. And we hope that by the end of this year, when we gather in this bottom, we will be having some of our consequences, but we all know that not all of them could have that opportunity with Bonwa at the same time. But we do have trust that it's a work in progress. Thank you very much. I'm going to request the department to be released and the other people so that we just tack some issues with the committee.
Thank you, bye bye. Go well.
Pianji, you are released.
Thank you.